We've just caught up with guest conductor Vladimir Yurovsky. Welcome back to Philadelphia.
Thank you.
This is a very interesting program. Is there a theme to the program?
There is no theme as such, but all three works are connected by the rather tragic background events which caused their creation partly. And they all three show a different way of handling such a tragic situation. So to Beethoven, the time when he was writing his fifth piano concerto meant a national tragedy because Napoleon occupied Vienna. And when Napoleonic troops marched into Vienna, half the city got destroyed. A lot of people were killed. Buildings were lying in ruins. And Beethoven saw all this. Miaskovsky wrote his 10th symphony in 1926-27, and he was inspired by the poem by one of the greatest Russian writers, Alexander Pushkin, the poem which is entitled The Bronze Horseman. Now, any of you who has been to St. Petersburg, or at least has seen pictures of St. Petersburg, will remember the majestic statue of Peter the Great on the bank of Neva, presiding over the largest stone ever moved by a human being. But obviously, the poem is not about the monument itself. It's about the tragic events in St. Petersburg in the late 18th, early 19th century, where the city built in the middle of marshland often became a victim of massive floods. And those floods also meant destruction and death. And so Pushkin describes one of those floods, and when a young man loses his fiancée to the raging Neva and curses the monument of the Tsar, of Peter, who by building the city in this most inappropriate of all places, he sees him as the actual reason for the suffering of so many people. And then the statue comes to life and chases this poor man through the entire city, and then his corpse is found in the water. But then you should know that Miaskovsky has been through a personal tragedy less than 10 years prior to that. His father was killed by a raging mob on the streets of St. Petersburg. And his way of retelling the story of the Bronze Horseman makes you feel there is something more than just a romantic novel which inspired him. It feels like those ghosts were haunting him personally.
The Miaskovsky has an unusual history. The Philadelphia Orchestra premiered it in the U.S. in 1930, but it hasn't been played since here.
Yeah. Well, the interesting story about the original performance of the symphony is that the first performance of it took place in Moscow, and it was a disastrous performance because it was taken on by an orchestra, Per Simfans, which was a very brilliant, very courageous, at the time, ensemble of musicians who performed without conductor in the fashion of the democratic fashion of the time. But they didn't come to terms with the piece. They technically could not master it.
Well, it's a big orchestra.
It's a huge orchestra with 8 horns, 4 trumpets, and massive string section and percussion, etc. And it is a highly complex work. It's very brief. It's only 15, 16 minutes long, but it's extremely challenging in terms of its language and technical difficulties. So that orchestra was responsible for a less than very successful first performance. And then Sergei Prokofiev, who was a close friend of Miaskovsky, convinced Stokowski here in Philadelphia to take this piece into his program. And Stokowski gave it its US-American premiere in 1930, and that was received really well. It was a big success. But unfortunately, as so many of those pieces which got premiered in the 1920s and 30s, they got forgotten after that, partly because it's very difficult to perform it on its own. It's too short. So one of the keys to the success of this symphony, apart from a very, very strong orchestra, is a good pairing. So we chose here to conclude the second half with another great work of the 20th century, also inspired by a work of literature.
Yes.
This time not by Pushkin, but by Gogol, and that is Taras Bulba, which Janáček wrote between 1915 and 1918 during the First World War. And he took the inspiration from Gogol's novel, but he dedicated it to the Russian nation, which was fighting against Germany at the time. And Janáček's sympathies were obviously with the Russians, which is rather ironic today, because obviously with the recent conflict between Russia and Ukraine, one tends to see Russia in a different light. But for Janáček, and certainly for Gogol, Ukrainian people and Russian people were one inseparable union. And the hero, the protagonist of the novel, Taras Bulba, gives away his own life and the life of his two sons for the victory of Russia in its war against Poland. So I can see a strong parallel between the way to handle the tragedy of Beethoven and Janáček. And inside, there is this very dark and rather depressive story as told by Myaskovsky.
Myaskovsky, I understand, was considered the father of the Soviet symphony. Is that right?
He was certainly the most important compositional teacher of his era, and hundreds of Soviet composers, among them my grandfather.
I was going to ask about your family connection.
Yeah, my grandfather came from Kiev. He was born in Ukraine, and he first studied there. But then he came to Moscow, and between, I think he graduated from the conservatory in 1938. So between 1934 and 1938, he was Myaskovsky's student, together with such people as Aram Khachaturian, Tikhon Krennikov, and many others. So the name of Myaskovsky was always pronounced with the deepest awe and respect at home. And I can actually see a lot of similarities between his music and the music of my grandfather. Not direct quotes or anything, but general stylistic influence was there. But it's quite interesting that Myaskovsky, who himself was a typical academic type of composer, very interested in counterpoint and sort of deeply immersed in all those rather technical issues, he was at the same time extremely well informed about anything which was happening outside Russia. So his personal, rather conservative style of composition was very much a matter of personal choice. But he was aware of everything written by Stravinsky or Schoenberg. And so in this particular piece we're talking about, in the 10th Symphony, he comes closest to becoming an atonal composer. So this is a very interesting dilemma, which you can see, the composer's dilemma. On one hand side, he's obviously an offspring of this Russian symphonic tradition coming from Tchaikovsky, Mussorgsky partly, and then going on with people like Scriabin and Prokofiev. But at the same time, he felt attracted to the atonal language, which was common at the time in Germany, Austria. And so this symphony is like the meeting point of two traditions. It is Russian, but at the same time, it has massive influences of the West European modernism of the era?
Well, considering how established and popular he was in the 1920s and 1930s, even here in the United States, it's great that you're bringing this music back.
No, it's very important, I find, today to dig out all those unjustly neglected and forgotten works. And I'm very grateful that it was actually Philadelphia Orchestra which proposed me the idea of taking one of the Miaskovsky symphonies, and they immediately said, I want to do the 10th, because this is one of those you hear very rarely. And it was a particularly happy coincidence that this symphony of all was premiered here in Philadelphia in 1930. So I'm very happy we're doing it, and I hope with time there will be other occasions to present some other of, by the way, 27 symphonies Miaskovsky wrote.
27? That's amazing.
Yeah. Given that most composers in the 19th century didn't come over the cursed number 9 after Beethoven, he was one of those who broke the mold and managed to free the symphony from the ghost of Beethoven. To add to this, I have to say that most of his symphonies are very short. I don't think there is a single symphony written in 4 movements. Most of them are in 2 or 3 movements. This symphony is in 1 movement. So it is actually more of a tone poem than a symphony.
Structurally, it's different than from the Janáček.
Yes. Well, it feels like one of the following miniatures, but Janáček is even more concise. So you see, for Miaskovsky, it takes approximately 16 minutes to tell this one story. Janáček needs much less than that. His movements are no longer than 7-8 minutes.
Well, we look forward to the second half. Thank you so much, Vladimir Yurovsky.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.